Okay, gentlemen, fasten your seatbelts. The regular Thursday, June 25th, 2009 meeting of the Cambria Community Services District Board of Directors will come to order. Will everyone please rise and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance to our flag and country.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Play ball.
Let the record reflect that all five members of the board are present, so we do have a quorum. We have with us this afternoon David Hirsch standing in for Tim Carmel as our district counsel. Is there a report from closed session?
This will be last week's closed session?
Yes.
Last month's.
Yeah. Correct. No report.
Nothing to report.
Thank you. The next item on the agenda is the first of the two public comment sessions. I don't have 7C and 7D on the consent agenda, so those three items will be considered separately. Are there any other additions, deletions, et cetera, to the agenda?
Staff has one.
Yes.
Item 8A, pull it in its entirety.
Okay. When we get to item 8B, perhaps the general manager can provide an explanation as to why 8A has been pulled. Okay. Thank you. We are pulling the three consent calendar items, and the remainder of the agenda stands as revised. We'll now move on to acknowledgments and presentations, and I understand we have a presentation from the Friends of the Library this morning. And I think Jerry Farrell, the president of the Friends of the Library, is here to kick it off. Jerry, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, members of the board and staff. My name is Jerry Farrell, and I'm president of the Friends of the Cambria Library. And I want to thank you for letting us speak to you this afternoon about some exciting news for Cambria. Since 1991, the Friends of the Library have worked diligently on behalf of all Cambrians to keep our library open the most hours we possibly can with the kinds of materials and services that Cambrians want and need. A free, open public library is at the heart of every town, but especially a small community like ours. A library brings a town the world. This is certainly true here in Cambria. For over 90 years, a library has been at the heart of Cambria. It was first located in the Mugetti store. The meager collection that made up the Cambria Library moved to Judge Gay's home in 1921. Mrs. Annie Gay was the first librarian, called custodian then, and received a whopping salary of $7 a month. She was not reimbursed for the use of her house. If we think our hours are short now, back then the library was only open 2.5 days a week. The fact that the collection was only 47 books may have been a factor. Nonetheless, the library signed up 26 people in its first month. By the end of the year, there were 119 borrowers, and the library was here to stay. Their circulation was 1,967 items that year. Then the library's journey around town began. First to the Bank of Italy building. Does anybody still remember the Bank of Italy? New digs at 900 Main Street, near the Vets Hall, the Jocelyn Center, the Bowling Green, at the entry to the West Village. Since then, it's consistently been well used. In fact, per capita, it's one of the most heavily used branches in the county system. We've had 11 librarians through the years. Can you remember any of these? Annie Gay, who was our first custodian, Carrie Wills, Bertha Gillespie, Maurice Brocklebank, Erica Ness, Elizabeth Pollard, who is still a very active patron, Alice Hoffman, Lynn Weish, Kristen Barnhart, Kathleen Neve, and of course, our very own Joan Comer. From the original 26 patrons, we now have 4,700 cardholders, and over 600 of them are children. Every month, Cambrians check out over 10,000 items and use the library's 3 computers more than 300 hours. That's each month. Did you know that Cambria Branch was the first in the county to have a computer? And that was thanks to a friend of the library. Being the only freestanding library for an 80-mile stretch on the coast from Cayucas to Big Sur, our little library serves over 8,000 North Coast residents. It's been undersized for several years now. Our librarian and her 3 staff and several volunteers every day try to work together in the library's 8x8 workroom. It's cozy, but not really conducive to getting the job done efficiently. Everyone in town is aware of the parking situation. We don't need to elaborate on that. The very small children's area gets easily overcrowded during story time or the summer reading program. Let's face it, it's time. It's time for a new library. And what we're asking is the community to help us move. And I'd like to introduce Greg Fitzgerald, who will continue the presentation.
Thanks, Jerry, for setting the stage for us. Good afternoon, directors.
Good afternoon.
My name is Greg Fitzgerald, and it's my pleasure to be addressing Cambrians again today, especially from this side of the podium. Cambrians should be proud of the tremendous work the Friends of the Library have done to keep this library open in the face of budget cuts, to add to the library's collection, and to make the Cambria Library the first in the county to connect to the internet. After many years of dormancy, Dr. Grace Crittenden and her, so we can keep open with our small but mighty staff, reading programs for our children and for those of us who are still young at heart and in our minds, but not necessarily in the mirror. I'm looking at the chair here. What you don't
Thanks
see here. Sorry. What you don't see here is
I'll
the
get
money.
You for that.
Yeah, I know you will. Is the money and volunteer time the Friends led Cambrians to provide so the library could stay open as many hours as possible during past budget crunches, and we all know that California and this county have been through quite a few. And through Cambrians' generosity and community spirit have brought in over $500,000 for library construction so far. And it's time for us to get serious. As Jerry says, the library has always been undersized for the population it serves, even 20 years ago. Now, we need to remember that a library is actually an environmental boon to all of us. The fact is, collectively owned books save trees. More space means more room for a collection, saving gas and pollution that driving to San Luis to get books or buy books requires. The new building is being planned to be as green as possible. In fact, one of the key criteria for screening architectural firms was their ability and experience to build to the U.S. Green Building Council's leadership in energy and environmental design standards. And as it says, the Friends have been pursuing all options for a bigger library. And this has been going on for years now to find a good space. So for the past 5 years, the Friends have been pursuing those options, from locating suitable sites to raising funds, navigating a long county process, and evaluating 24 architectural firms, arriving at 3 firms for a design competition. That's where we currently stand. And we've been highly successful so far. Last week, the County Board of Supervisors approved the funding mechanism for the county's portion of construction costs. And that's thanks to our past county supervisor and our current county supervisor. And the Friends have been working on this since March of 2006 to get to that point. So that is a big win. And as it says here, the policy is and has been since the last library construction project in this county, which was over 13 years ago, that capital projects require at least a 50% match from the local community. So what does that mean for the new Cambria Library? Well, it means raising a total cost of the library project is approaching $4.5 million. But with the diligent efforts of the Friends in negotiating with the county, the cost of Cambria is less than half that. The Friends have worked really hard for years to get this project off the ground for the community that they love. So we're only asking for our neighbors to help with the final push. Libraries in America are really the cornerstones of the communities they serve. You can see that this one has been always at the heart of town. Free access to ideas and information in a library is imperative for education, employment, enjoyment, and for self-government. I mean, don't your documents go there too? Yes, they do. They are places of learning and research for our children. As Norman Cousins once said, a library is a delivery room for the birth of ideas and the place where history comes to life. Libraries are a legacy that we give to future generations, offering both the heritage of the past and the promise of the future. They also bring, surprisingly, economic benefit. Last year, a Pennsylvania study points out that for every dollar invested in a public library, the community receives a return of $5.50. That's not a bad investment. With all that said, we invite you to join us. On July 18th, we'll be officially kicking this new library off with an afternoon of barbecue and music that we're calling Reading Rhythm and Blues, and it'll be right next door in the Pine Dorado grounds. And we hope to see everybody there, and we look forward to working together for Cambria's new library. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions, board members? Mr. D'Amico.
Yes.
Question. Does the $4.5 million include also what I would call the build-out inside?
Yes.
Okay.
That's the full project from ground to finished.
When people look at that, you know, it seems like a high dollar per square foot, but they don't realize that's you're talking internet, you're talking cabling, you're talking computers, and
Shelving books,
right. Okay. Right.
Furniture, all of that.
So it's an all-in cost.
Right. From buying the ground to fully equipped, that's the turnkey.
Turkey.
Turnkey. Great. Thank you.
I knew there was a word. Thanks.
Greg?
Yes,
and
Peter.
The location of the new library?
There is a piece of property on Cornwall that they can't comment on it, and there is nothing
Understood.
To comment on, but
right.
that is being investigated, has been investigated, and that's as far as I can go with it.
Understood.
Okay.
Any other questions? Thank you very much.
Hey, thanks
Appreciate
so
it.
Much. Thank you for the time.
I'm sure we'll make the effort to be there.
Very good.
Thank you. With that, we'll move on to the next item on the agenda. Under special reports, we'll have a report from the Sheriff's Department. I do see a representative from the Sheriff's Department here today. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Good afternoon. My name is Ben Hall. I'm the commander of the Sheriff's Coastal Patrol Division. We handle the Sheriff's Patrol from Avila Beach up to the Monterey County line. I see last month in Cambria, we handled about 223 calls for service and took 30 reports. Compared to 2008, we took nearly 300 calls for service and 50 reports. What happening we had a number of our usual domestics cases. A few minor thefts. We had a vacation home that was burglarized sometime over the last few weeks, and a 25-inch flat-screen TV was taken. There's no suspects in there at this time. And someone had a bronze sculpture stolen from one of the galleries on Main Street. We're right now, this station is kind of working at our July 4th response because it's a pretty big impact in the county on the coastal range here. Avila Beach gets a number of extra people. Of course, Cambria does and Cayucas. For the most part, we're putting a lot of our resources into Cayucas, trying to make that or have made that into more of a family-oriented event so you can walk down on the beach and enjoy the fireworks with your family. On the beach area, the road adjacent to it, there is no alcohol at all, no fireworks, and we don't allow any fires on the beach except for in the fire rinks. So with all those things, I think it's made a significant improvement on that particular event down there. For Cambria, we will be beefing up some patrol. We hopefully will have a couple bicycle officers working the park area in the early evening hours.
24-hour answering service at 927-6223. Just a note that the Parks and the PROS Commission did meet this past month, and they were the ones who made a recommendation after consensus to recommend foregoing the concerts in the park, and you'll see that in our budget discussion today. And their next meeting is July 7th at 10 o'clock and 204. And then since I did this report, I want to make it publicly known and knowledgeable that as a result of the budget today, if it gets passed, there is a change significantly in the rebate program. It's not in the report. That being that we've been through all these years just covering anything that anybody submits in the form of a rebate as long as they follow the procedure. But you'll notice that the program has been greatly reduced, down to $2,000, because staff hasn't had a whole lot of time to work on how and what and when and where. What we did collaboratively come up with to recommend with the Finance Committee's recommendation today in the budget is that the $2,000 and the rebates be given for only the 1.28 gallons per flush toilets after July 1st. So no more washing machines, no more dishwashers. It will strictly be limited to the 1.28 gallons per flush toilets only, effective July 1st. Now, knowing that there's people who are working on rebate programs or rebate, you know, forms this month, we'll take those forms because of how we close the books for fiscal year 08-09 through July 31st. I know that sounds confusing, but I just want to make sure if anybody's out there working on a project under the current program, we'll take those through July 31st because they'll be carried into this fiscal year. We'll get a notice together. We'll get it published on the website, but I wanted to at least make that announcement today. Under the Fire Chief's report, the Fire Safe Focus Group in Cambria has been awarded a grant fund for two community chipping weekends, and Mark notes in his report that they're planned right now tentatively for two weekends in late August, and he'll get those dates to us as soon as possible so that the community is well aware of when those will occur. Moving on to the Finance Manager's report, there was only one disbursement in May for in excess of the $100,000, and that was for the loan payment in the amount of $174,000 paid to the State Water Resources Control Board. We did get the Independent Auditor's report and financial statements for the fiscal year ended June 30, 2008, up on the CCSD website. The current reserve balance is $4.3 million. That was as of May 31st. Those are general funds. And then Al put a note here in his report about the return on LAIF for the month of May was 1.5.
General Manager.
I just wanted to ask one question about the payment through to the water. Or it was. Is that for the return on the well that we had?
No, that's for the annual loan. That's our debt service payment.
Okay.
No, that the check that you're remembering for the DHS for SR4,
yeah.
That was a lump sum payment made back a couple of years ago, as I recall.
Okay.
So that we're paid off. We're done with that.
Exactly. Any other questions of the general manager? Hearing none, we'll move on to member and board committee reports. Any reports from board committees? Apparently not. We'll move on then to the consent calendar. As I indicated earlier, there are three items that have been pulled, items 7A, 7C, and 7D. We'll begin with item 7A, which is consideration of approval of expenditures for the month of May 2009. Director McKinnon.
Yes. I think it's important that we as a board begin to look a little bit closer to this particular line item, that many times we look at it and give it a rubber stamp. We pay a great deal of attention to what the public says, and that's a good thing, and what the general manager says, and that's a good thing. But I think we need some debate around some of the issues that I see. We are the stewards of public trust, and we are in a balancing act between this providing service and also providing what I would say the bang for the buck, the efficiency of the CCSD operations. An example, innovative concepts, which has been a hot button since I've joined the CCSD board. I look at it and I see $55,000 a year that we're spending for broadband. That's high-speed data transmission, and I question places like the Vets Hall. what in the world are we doing with this broadband in all areas of our organization? This is just an example, I think. This is not necessarily bad, but I just want to bring up to the board that we need to debate and discuss, is this what we really need to have in our organization? Or can we reduce it and make it
Deliver services to the district.
And her duration of the present contract?
It's till the end of June 2010.
End of June 2010. Okay. Essentially, that was my point, that I would like us to debate the details of our financial expenses. And what I would like to see is management by exception. We have an operating budget, and I'm not so much concerned about the details. If we can understand them, it's the things that are either pluses or minuses to that plan. Obviously, the minuses are the ones that hurt us the most. We're in, a very fragile time across the state, and even though we're not impacted as much in Cambria, we have some future threats that could come in, and I want to make sure that we're prepared, both near-term and long-term. So I'll leave it at that. That was the comment I made on this one item.
Well, Director McKinnon, I think your comments are very prudent. Let me make a couple of suggestions. First of all, long-range budget planning is imperative. And so I think there's no debate about the fact that we need to look at the long-term as well as the short-term. And every time we go through a consideration of a budget, we ought to be keeping both the long-term and the short-term in mind. Having said that, may I suggest that the Finance Committee be the place where consideration of this begins? And I would encourage the Finance Committee, if there are issues regarding specific expenditures that the district is making, to bring them to the attention of the board. Yeah. There are policy issues that are wrapped up in a lot of these expenditures, and if there's the need for a debate about the policy and maybe a change in direction, I think it's entirely appropriate to have it on the board's agenda.
And as a follow-up to that, and I see Frank, the general manager has made the comment that she wants the board direction versus the finance committee, and I think that's appropriate as well, exactly what you said. Right. In certain areas that are really long-term effects.
I will say this about the Davidson
I think this is a very competent organization, one person, but an organization. And she has done great things for Cambria. But on the other hand, there's no grants that are being challenged at this time. And as I read her contract, it was on a 24-hour minimum week basis, and there's certain things that she's doing, particularly in the area of PROS, that I think could be done by PROS instead of her chairing and doing many things that I think that organization could do on her own.
Understood. Director D'Amico.
I think one of the items on the agenda is the bylaws, and I've read them again, which I'll have comment later on in this one section, but one of the things which I think is really where the general manager has pointed out and I think is right is the board should set policy and the general manager should execute. And while I don't know Davidson and we could talk about what was good and what was bad, but two interesting points. The manager just said that her contract is an annual contract, runs out next year in 2010. That means that contract was just recently signed then again. Oh, it was more than 1 year?
Initially, I want to say it was a 2 or 3 year agreement, so it has one more year remaining.
Right, fine.
And it's in the budget.
Then we have time, and I'd like to put it as an issue for whether we can discuss it today. We can't. I guess we can't resolve anything because it wasn't on the agenda.
Right.
But this contract, if it's roughly $5,000, that's a $60,000 contract. Innovative Concepts is another $60,000. Do we have, if we have it, fine, council or general manager can approach, but these contracts, were they competitively bid? Was there an RFP put out? Was there competition? Because the process actually creates the need for people to look at what they want. And to do an RFP, you've got to actually lay out the goals, the objectives of the person or the events that you want. Whether it's a grant writer, you set stipulations. I don't mind. We can talk about how it actually goes about. And that's a job for whether it's staff and the engineers or staff and other writers. And I've done it in the past where you take your present grant writer and you come up with an RFP. Because what you do want is the competition. Same thing with broadband and the internet site. We've got a mix here, and we never know what defined requirements, as you do with construction projects, which I'm very familiar with. There's certain things you don't go sometimes on competitive, but we did, and the general manager did a thorough job, I guess, with Mr. Sanders and President Sanders, in getting good applications from different legal counsel, and there was an ability to look at the competitive capabilities and obviously also cost of different services, and you make a judgment. So you and I guess, and I think Muriel, we're all fairly new here, and that's fine, but I think we've got to set up a policy that the general manager knows needs to be followed and which requires our input to look at the RFPs and make sure that's what we want as representatives of the communities to expend that kind of money. You can spend a lot of money on a website, but then again, there's other websites that for $1,000 a month, they look very, very glamorous too. But I don't know, and that's the thing. We don't know the exact detail of it, but I would like to see it in an RFP because then we'd all understand what's being bought and sold here. So if we could put that somewhere in an agenda item, maybe a couple of months from now, and give time to the general manager to look at what we have in our budget that's a repetitive, high-value service that we're buying.
Director Clift?
I think what Director McKinnon is talking about is a feeling that we have felt on the Finance Committee, in which we make decisions or make recommendations, and we're not always sure that it's a full majority of the board that's going down that particular path. And I think what Director McKinnon's asking for, and what I would be asking for too, is for, and maybe we can do it later in the budget part too, or later at a separate meeting, kind of a direction from the whole board as to how aggressive you want us to be in terms of looking at individual things. Where do you want us to go? And where's our boundaries in terms of recommending policy? So I think that's probably the key, rather than ending up in the future to be able to do that. I think that's what I assume that's what Director McKinnon's asked for, and that's what, if not, I'm asking for.
Sure, I agree totally. And recall, it's our meeting. This is a board of directors meeting.
Absolutely.
And so we should have at least a chance to speak together.
I have some suggestions, but before I offer them, Director Chaldicott, do you want to weigh in?
Yeah, thank you. I think the thing that, by benefit of being here a while, is that both areas we've discussed, we've had poor service from different suppliers. We used to have a newsletter published outside, used to cost us a fortune, until we brought it in-house with Connie. That's just one. And we've also had to hire public relations people for short projects, which he does. We've had to hire grant writers, which he does, and we've had very poor return on investment when we were outside. We currently have a system that works, or a person that works very effectively for what we need. And same with Innovative Concepts. We've had poor internet service in the past, and we had to discard that, and we came up with a more expensive but an effective supplier. So there's one caveat is that we currently have extremely effective suppliers that, you know, we're looking at right now. And when you go back in the, when you go back out again, the chances are, unless you've got a really good RFP, which take, you know, which is, I think, all the way to go, your chances are you may end up with some duds again. And the problem I see is that, for example, if your computer service goes down, guess who takes the brunt of that? The staff and the general manager. They're the people trying to run the daily work with inefficient equipment. And that those are always things that, you know, when it's working great, it's great to say, yeah, let's do it, and let's turn, you know, turn down the screw and reduce the cost. But you don't necessarily, you know, the wheels sometimes come off. That's all.
Go ahead, Director Clift.
Yeah, and it's an important point you're making, and it's an important policy point that we ought to be looking at as a board. As to, and I guess the Finance Committee's question would be, at what point do we look at outside contracting as compared to internal work? And there's a across a lot of areas that we can look at for that those kinds of things. And it's just a matter of I don't think the Finance Committee wants to spin its wheels doing things or making recommendations that aren't going to be the policy of this board.
Get some consensus here on the direction. There's an old adage that applies to most government agencies, and that is that money drives policy. That is, unless you have the revenue, the money to implement a policy, you really don't have a policy. So you make policies around whatever the agency can afford, reasonably afford. Now, that doesn't apply at the federal level because the federal government can print its own money anytime it wants to. So the adage is turned on its head in Washington, D.C. Policy drives money at that level. But at our level, it's the other way around. Of all of the discretionary decisions the board makes, perhaps the most discretionary and the most important is the adoption of a budget. And from that budget flows the implementation of the board's policies. So having said that, for myself, I'm never wedded to a budget. If there is a need for a change, then the board ought to make the change. Just because we've adopted a budget doesn't mean that we blindly go forward and implement all of the policies that attend that budget. There are too many exigencies that can occur that would make the board want to reconsider some of the numbers, for example, in a budget. What that kind of inexorably leads to is the conclusion that all of the policies and all of the numbers in the budget ought to be under review all the time. We have to be nimble, particularly in an environment that we're operating in right now, where we've got some revenue shortfalls on the one hand, and we've got the state looking over our shoulder, threatening to walk away with 8% of our property tax revenues. So we have to be nimble. I would really be reluctant to inhibit any member of the board by way of some sort of policy direction that would what I hear right now is a concern over two particular issues, and you're absolutely right, Director McKinnon. These issues have been beaten like a government mule. We hear the drumbeat all the time, and it has to do with the Davidson contract and the broadband services. For starters, I would suggest that the Finance Committee look at these two issues and over the next couple of months determine whether or not there is room for improvement, whether we ought to go out with a new RFP for these services, kind of thoroughly hash over the issues, and if you think that it is something that rises to the level of a policy issue, let's get it on the board's agenda. Does that make sense?
I agree to that. It's like talking to zero-based budgeting, which never really does occur. But this
right.
maybe is a hybrid that we're right. looking at two sensitive areas, and if we just simply vet them, mm-hmm. that we verify that it's appropriate that we have Davidson and we have innovative concepts. But what in this present time is more competitive than the communications industry?
Right.
And there goes some red light flashing in innovative concepts. Let's just right. vet and make sure that we're getting the best bang for the buck.
I couldn't agree more.
So we'll do that.
Great. Is that satisfactory to the other board members? Excellent. Why don't we take these items individually then as we consider them? So for item 7A, is there a motion to approve the expenditures for the month of May 2009?
So move.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded to approve the expenditures for the month of May 2009. All those in favor say aye.
Mr. President, yes. I have to say I will have to abstain for potential conflict since I noticed there's a bill for AECOM, my employer, on it.
Understood.
So
okay.
I will abstain.
All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Let the record reflect that the motion passes 4-0 with Director D'Amico abstaining. The next pulled consent calendar item is item 7C, which is consideration of adoption of resolution 2000.
Vanscoyuc Associates for Federal Advocacy Services would be brought back. It would be general funds. And so you'll see in today's budget discussion that we did that. The Finance Ad Hoc Committee and staff did that. And this, I also worked to negotiate a six-month contract so we can kind of get a feel for where we're going, what we're doing, rather than just confining ourselves to 1 year. So that was acceptable to Greg Burns with Vanscoyuc. So this contract carries us through, continues the services from July 1st through December 31st of 2009 at the same rate. And you'll see I added a bit of a contingency just in case there are any expenses. I have to admit he's not billed us for any, but as a contract manager and project manager, I always build it in as a just in case so that it's there. So for $62.25 per month, I anticipated a 10% contingency for a total over the 6 months of $41,085.
Thank you. Director McKinnon, before we have members from the public come up, would you like to
my
say
comment?
Anything about
yeah.
this? Yes.
In looking at the memorandum of agreement, the one thing that I see is missing, I'm supporting the advocate, quote unquote, lobbyist, hate to use that word, but that's what it is, mm-hmm. And necessary. But what I don't like is the potential of $80,000 a year without any information from this gentleman as to appropriate strategy and advising the CCSD as to where we are in the project. I do think that's mandatory, and I know that was asked a while back, but I just don't understand how this gentleman can accept without a report of some kind that establishes where we are and what he's done to date. That's my comment.
Let me state that I agree wholeheartedly with your comment, and I think I'm going to recommend that after we hear from the members of the public that if we go forward, we should incorporate into this memorandum of agreement provision that requires a monthly report. Okay, I have one request to speak on this item from Mahala Burton.
In capping the anticipated expenses, what are those anticipated expenses? Can he go on first class air travel? Can he go out to eat? Can he go to Buenos Aires? We don't know. We need to have that specified. What is the plan? In this memorandum of agreement, it says there is a plan. Well, what is the plan? I think the community should be able to know what the plan is. What are the issues? I read this, and I did a trial balloon. I let several people read this, intelligent people, including my husband, his multiple degrees, and he said, I can't believe that this is going to be presented. I think that if we are going to have a contract, that if this man breached a contract and it went to a judge, the judge is, you know, in order to determine any damages, how could he figure out what this man was supposed to perform? Does anybody know? I mean, from reading this, this is sort of a question. So I would ask that you not sign this and you send it to Mr. Carmel and let Mr. Carmel write up a proper contract to cover us and write it so that if we get a reduction in property expenses, because my property taxes are paying for this lobbyist, your property taxes, everybody in this community, if there's a reduction in property taxes of 8%, we fire the lobbyist. Okay, thank you.
Thank you. The next request to speak is from Mary Webb.
Thank you for allowing me to speak. Mary Webb, Cambria. I'm absolutely opposed to having any contracts with lobbyists for desalination. This is another, $80,000 a year. We haven't seen a budget for desalination. We've never voted for desalination as a community. And now we're being tacked on with more money every month. The contract, like Mahala Burton said, is completely inappropriate. There's no there's nothing there. So what is this guy supposed to be doing for us? What are we paying for? How long are we going to be paying for it? What's the total cost of diesel? What's the total cost for build-out reduction? We don't have any of these line items on any kind of a budget. We don't have any numbers to look at in total. We're just being eaten away, you know, one month at a time. Here's another $8,000 here. Here's another $20,000 there.
Way Washington works, you do need to have an advocate there, and I understand that. The Representative Capps has asked for $2 million for Cambria. It's in the disclosures on her website for what she's asked for, and the federal government has said that they will help us out with about $10.3 million. Anybody that's interested, and I spent a lot of time on a website looking into this particular lobbyist, there's a website called opensecrets.org, and they have all the lobbying information you could ever want to know, and you can look up either by the service district or by the lobbying firm. That's opensecrets.org. And just looking at Greg Burns, who's the lobbyist who's listed for this project, it looks like he's done a lot of lobbying for the Army Corps of Engineers and will probably be very well suited to the project we're looking at. It's a lot of money, and it would be nice to have some more clear expectations of what we're going to get for it. Thank you.
Thank you. I have no more requests to speak on this item. Is there anybody else in the audience who would like to speak on this item? Seeing no one, board members, I suggest that we have our district council simply draft a paragraph to incorporate into this memorandum of agreement that requires that we receive monthly reports. I don't think we need to hash out the exact verbiage here at the meeting. I would just leave it in his hands and then return it to Van Skoyek and Associates with that language in it, and I'm sure they would not object. Any other comments? Director D'Amico.
Yeah, I have fun churning out words. So, my okay. comment, and I'm trying to, because the issue is that I want to make sure from my perspective, too. And I think, well, whether we can, and DSAL can take up a whole evening of discussion, but
sure.
I almost went a little further and try to make it more generic in the sense that with regard consultants advise with regard to various federal agencies and legislative issues regarding federal funding of major capital projects, i.e. or e.g. desalination, because I think that is the crux of why he's there. We're talking about the stimulus bill. We're talking about federal allocations. We're talking about getting funding, because he really can't lobby for the Corps, but he can lobby for it in writing monthly on the components of the agency and legislative plan. And that fits the bill of something comes up, we get a detail. I mean, it's going to be, you know, there was this bill, you know, this committee, this subcommittee, we're going to get an appropriation, because that's the real thing, when they really start appropriating money. Isn't that the right characterization?
Correct.
Yeah. So, I mean, you can be on a lot of lists, but if you never get appropriated, it's meaningless.
Stimulus money or appropriations, yeah. Money is money.
Money, yeah.
Money is the bottom line. Did you get that, Madam General Manager? Okay. Other board member comments? I detect that there's a consensus to go along with Director D'Amico's amendments to the Memorandum of Agreement.
I was just wondering, in the perfect world where they offers money for anything, whether, I guess, e.g., DCEL does take care of it, but I'd like to think that any water project that comes our way, we can say yes to.
Well, I think Director D'Amico's language included.
Yeah, it said major capital projects for the community.
Just a point, and yes. Maybe Mr. President, you could address it. I understand that regarding the stimulus package, that lobbyists are not allowed to go and champion individual projects.
That's correct.
Okay. So for DSAL is fine. That's a specific one. But okay.
Yes.
You've answered that.
Yeah. There is a provision in the legislative enactment that authorized the disbursement of the stimulus package money that, with respect to individual projects, lobbyists are not allowed to interject themselves into the process. However, with this particular allocation of stimulus money, while the legislation was pending, Greg Burns was able to work with the Corps of Engineers and with some legislative representatives on Capitol Hill to steer the money in our direction.
Excellent.
So, but you're right. There is that provision. Well, I detect a consensus here on the board in terms of Director D'Amico's suggested amendments. Is there a motion?
I'll make a motion to accept the agreement or memorandum with the stipulated changes or. Changes which are...
I did. The first thing I noticed was we didn't have an effective date for it. So, and the other one is I was looking for a sunset clause, or at least a review, because eventually we'll want to come back and review this again.
Okay. And Director D'Amico, you had some comments as well. Is that correct?
I'm sorry. Yes. 7D.
7D.
Not our pay cut, but the actual bylaws itself.
Too much paper. Yeah.
I have a reservation, but probably would agree to the overall bylaw change. But I find item 5.3, if council could look at that, essentially the fourth line, or third line, once the board of directors takes action, directors should commit to supporting said action and not create barriers to the implementation of said action. I personally believe that I would rather have seen that read, directors should not create barriers to the implementation of said action. If a director honestly votes against an action, I don't know that he has to commit to be out there supporting that action. And I, for one, will not be the one to do something like that.
Yeah.
So
remove commit to supporting.
Commit to supporting the action and the word and.
Yeah.
He should not, no director should. Once the board acts, it is an act. And therefore, that's the way our system works. But right. And to not create barriers to the implementation of said action.
I couldn't agree with you more.
And we've seen some issues in one of the other districts. I know there's quite a thing, and I think that was part of the thing. Why wasn't he supporting it publicly?
Right.
but...
No, I had a personal experience involving a major policy issue at this board, and I parted company with my colleagues. And quite frankly, I think that the language as proposed is probably unconstitutional. There is a First Amendment to the United States Constitution. So.
Yeah.
But once a decision is made, I think it is appropriate to have language that says that board members shall not obstruct the implementation. Mm-hmm. Any other proposed changes to the bylaws? You wanted a sunset clause. We could add adjectives and adverbs and so forth until we're blue in the face. But I think it says what it needs to say.
Yeah. Okay. On the item of a sunset clause, these bylaws are reviewed annually.
Every year.
So there is a form of a sunset clause already without having to put a specific sunset clause on any one item.
Okay. Correct.
I think the general manager did have a couple of words just to put in there.
Well, if you wanted to just the last statement with regard to having to review it every fiscal year, which you had a concern about, that it's in here. I just noticed that too. But if you want the words effective 7/1/09 to begin that paragraph, just so that it's clear, since you guys have already adopted these bylaws before and now you're amending them, if you just want it in that section 8.1 to start out that paragraph effective 7/1/09, each director is authorized and make that change, I think that would be helpful, because then we'd know why if somebody came back later and said, how come it changed?
Mm-hmm. Okay,
and then there'd be a record.
What section again?
If you look on page 32, section 8.1, under director compensation, if you just start 8.1 out with effective 7/1/09, comma, each director is authorized to receive $75.
Okay.
And that fits in with the budget.
Correct.
Yes, it
situation.
Does.
So
mm-hmm. Absolutely.
That makes sense.
Yeah, that's fine. All right. Any other proposed amendments to the bylaws?
Oh, no.
Okay. Is there a motion?
I'll move adoption of the. Are you going to discuss?
We have a request to speak that just came in.
I'll wait.
Mr. President.
Amanda Rice. Yes, while she's coming up.
We're talking D.
Yes. Yeah.
So I have a comment on that as well. But it's not changing the wording. So that's, that go.
We'll get it before we get to the motion.
Right.
Thank you. Yes, Amanda.
Thank you for the opportunity. In a way, I agree with Director Chaldecott on the sunset clause, because it, in a way, it gives you guys an opportunity to have it back up. It's only the difference is $25 per meeting per director, but raising it back up may become politically difficult, and having an automatic sunset clause then gets you out of that by making the decision now that it's going to end at a certain time, and then you can set it at 75 again next year for your bylaws. Just my thoughts.
Okay.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you. Responding to the comment, I think because the bylaws are reviewed annually,
was the Finance Committee recommended a 25% reduction in the stipend to set an example for CCSD administration and staff. We did request that that the employees, the CCSD employees, consider stepping up to the plate and giving up their 2009-2010 pay raises. It was rejected by the union. The general manager did, I guess, do due diligence. But I would say that it should be almost embarrassing that the state, San Luis Obispo, Paso, Atascadero, all have agreed to various salary reductions. And lo and behold, we aren't. And we do have some severe threats that may occur. They may not occur. But as the President has stated, what the future does hold, there's some significant dollar impacts potentially. I do think that the wages that are being paid in this CCSD organization are considerable, and we do have a very fragile budget. I would ask the employees to consider, against their union wishes, to step up to the plate and actually forgive their salary increases both merit and step increases for 2009-2010. I'd say that.
Sure, understood. May I suggest that we have the general manager pass that comment and request on to the employees, and we'll see what happens. All right. Getting back to the item at hand, is there a motion to approve the bylaws for the coming fiscal year as amended?
I move we approve the amended bylaws for 2009 to include the amendments presented here plus the amendment to the language presented by Director D'Amico.
Is there a second to the motion?
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
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 Motion carries. That brings us back to the one remaining item on the consent calendar, which is item 7B, which is consideration of approval of a resolution which would authorize an increase in the fire suppression benefit assessment. This item is being pulled from the agenda, and I'm going to ask the general manager to provide an explanation.
We're pulling it because in item 8B, within the budget that we worked on and the recommendations that are being moved forward today in this budget from the Finance Committee, there was no need to make a CPI adjustment to the fire suppression benefit assessment. And there's also a difference of opinion with regard to how the CPI is applied. So you'll see a note in the staff report that I delivered to you that we need to have a board policy, board direction on how the CPI is applied. In past, since the implementation of the fire suppression assessment benefit, we've always used a full fiscal year, which was prior to, and there's Director Sanders or President Sanders called me and said that maybe it should be changed now and looking at the current fiscal year. So as long as we can work within the confines of how we have to get the information submitted to the county in order that it gets appropriately placed on the tax rolls, we can work that out. I just feel like it needs to be established by full board policy through a resolution, and I'm committed to bringing that back. So therefore, we're not recommending any adjustment, and the rates from 2007-2008 will go for another year, so it'll be 3 years with no adjustment.
Any board comments? Fine. The item is pulled, and there will be no increase in the fire suppression benefit assessment for the coming fiscal year. Item 8B is a public hearing to consider adoption of Resolution 26-2009 approving the Cambria Community Services District operating budget for fiscal year 2009-2010. Is there a staff report?
Yes. I apologize. I'm not feeling well, and I feel like I'm losing my voice, so I'm going to do the best that I can. In the budget, first I want to make it clear, because I had some phone calls this week from people who are supportive, although they were a little confused because of the prior action with regard to the draft budget that was approved on April 23rd. One of the reasons why that was approved is because we wanted it in place in order to pursue the proposal for increases in water and sewer rates, so that the community didn't think you were just sending out this notice of proposed increases for nothing, that you had a plan in place, that you looked at your expenses, you looked at what the infrastructure and the systems were to maintain. And so those numbers were evaluated during a public workshop on April 14th. Again, when you decided, because there was not a majority protest on either, Resolution 24-2009 established the water service rates, and Resolution 25-2009 established the sewer rates. So that's the beginning of the background discussion that I didn't include in here. You'll see the fiscal impact with the budget that you have today, and I appreciate the work that we did. I enjoy the debates. I enjoy the conversations at the Finance Committee level. Staff and I work to make sure that we make considerations with regard to some really serious or significant impacts since the April 23rd passage, okay? And the Finance Committee supported that after they learned more or got more, and they made other suggestions that we were able to go back and say, okay, maybe we can lose that or reduce that. So in this budget today proposed for the Water Enterprise Fund, our total revenues projected at $1.8 million. I'm going to round, if you don't mind. I know this is going to cripe Alan. Al, I'm sorry. I love working with Al. In fact, I want to give a lot of kudos to Al. This guy's been here night and day, and the fact that he's a number cruncher bean counter, and I don't want to offend him because he knows I say that with all due respect. He also has to come into me going, you want to change that again? You want to do that again? You want to move that again? You want to change that again? So thank you, Al. I want to publicly make sure that you are acknowledged, as well as all the managers and staff who, quite frankly, were involved in this budget presentation and preparation along with the Finance Committee. Anywho, so I'm going to use rounded numbers. So the total expenditures, even though it's close to the $1.8 million, you're going to see in the Water Enterprise Fund that the Finance Committee is recommending the establishment of a transfer to reserves because we got some, $19,000. Wastewater, $1.9 million reserves, or revenues, I'm sorry. Same with the expenditures, but there's still a tiny bit of reserves in wastewater, $24,000, $25,000 rounded. The governmental funds, which are typically your general funds, that the majority of that is property tax receipts, okay? But then there's other fees. There's other the fire suppression assessment benefit that gets collected and user fees that we collect as a result of the vets hall fees, permitting in lieu and other fees. $3.8 million for revenues is projected, $3.7 million or close to $3.8 million for expenditures, but we're looking at a $15,000 potential surplus, and again, the Finance Committee is recommending the establishment of a transfer to reserves. It falls within admin only because that's the repository because of the zero-based budgeting. It doesn't mean that it's because ad funds are going to be close to $8,000, so that's the breakup, okay? Fire reserves will see the $7,500 from the sale of the surplus engine, and then the general funds, the $7,800. Just major significant differences, because this was difficult to put together. But if you look at the April 23rd budget that was approved by you all, and then you come forward, I labeled by department because it was the only way to keep my sanity, okay, as to how and what was different. There's major differences, and I want to start first with the fact that the Finance Committee and staff maintained the approved water and sewer rates. The water rate increase of 9.75 that was passed and the 15% sewer rate, those are contained within this budget. And you'll see they're still broken out on the line item, so it's easy to find. We were very conservative and maintained the level of what we consider to be the property tax receipts for next year, and that's a 2% decrease. Now, that comes after our information, knowledge, and meeting with SLO County that says, you guys are doing okay up there. You probably could be okay with a 3 to 4% increase. Well, we don't budget like that. Al and I are pretty good here these past few years, and we typically don't necessarily follow that. So the Finance Committee agrees that we need to be conservative about that and maintain that level of 2% down from the past this fiscal year. The fact that Brian retired, which is effective mid-August, while it's a gaping hole with regard to service levels within the organization that we get to absorb, there's still an opportunity here, and that's where you see some of the opportunities for the transfers to the reserves, okay? Doesn't mean that, you know, somebody might ask, well, why isn't there more? Well, because you'll see there were some increases as a result of the April 23rd agenda between the two times. So all the revenue and expenditure projections that we now have in this budget are through May. When we presented April, I want to say it was probably through February or March. Now we had a tighter actual number, and so they're now through the end of May. You'll see the decreased salaries, wages, and benefits by not filling the AGM utilities manager position as a result of Brian's retirement. And just for note, the CIP will have a corresponding reduction as well for water and wastewater when that comes back because he had a percentage of his time spent there. And that hits the departments of water, wastewater, and facilities and resources, which I'm now going to be taking over, and parks and rec. That's why you still see a little tiny bit still in parks and rec because he's still on staff until mid-August, okay? He's on leave. There were decreases from our initial estimations, and we eliminated the 5% projected CPI increase in the fire suppression assessment benefit, our benefit assessment, remembering, and I made the note that I will be bringing back a policy so that we have it clear for any years hereafter. We increased other revenue with regard to that sale of the surplus engine, so that's a difference because we thought we might get it sold in this fiscal year, so that's why it now appears in the next fiscal year. There was a suggestion yesterday by Director McKinnon with regard to that preparedness line item in the fire budget. While it might not seem significant to others because it was only $3,400, it's still significant because it allowed us an opportunity to look at it and go, well, what the heck is that? We don't want anybody to think that it's an item out there that if we're reducing it, we should have any concern. It's for self-contained breathing apparatus equipment, for minor tools and materials for NCOR. It clearly needs to be up in the operating equipment and supply. So that's where it got moved. And then we eliminated the 4% increase to franchise fees for Mission Country disposal. We worked closely with Tom Martin, and there was actually a lot of good discussion about phasing in a potential increase, which wasn't a bad idea. But then when we talked closely, as long as Mission Country can have a policy in place that allows them to collect for the bad debt, which is about 2.4% of what they were out of the rate adjustment they were going to be approaching you with, then they'll be okay because they have a vehicle by which they can collect on that, okay? The Finance Committee agreed with me. I think it's just terrible that we go after the good-paying Mission Country customers to pay for the bad-paying ones. So let's get a policy in place for them to collect that money so the rest of us who pay our Mission Country bills don't have to, okay? As a result of some training that Al attended with regard to the OPEB, which is other post-employment benefits actuarial that we as an agency have to have in place by the end of the fiscal year 9/10, so by June 30th, he went to some training and there were some changes in the rules that if we're a small organization, less than 100 employees, we can do it in-house as long as it follows the procedure. Al is a certified public accountant. He's extremely knowledgeable with his financial analytical background. So we're going to save $7,500 and just stay away from him for about a week or two while he does that. And so that will be an opportunity to bring those services in-house. And he gets to do that, although he says it's going to be a fun project. Good for him. Okay, and then we have the increased property tax revenue allocation for the six-month federal advocacy contract agency. It used to be SLOCOG when I started here in 2002, and I'm dating myself. I apologize, and so I need to correct
that. We'll never forgive you for that.
I know. I saw that this morning after I talked to Ed King, or left a message for Ed King again, and I thought, let's just not let anybody see this part of the meeting. So anyway, I have talked to representatives, including Marianne Carson and Mel McCulloch, the president of the Cambria Chamber of Commerce, to let them know, gave them the heads up. And I've also left messages. Ed King and I are playing phone tag with SLORTA so that we can find a way. And it seems like everyone is going to be finding a way cooperatively to see how they can either find a sponsor or someone else to take these services over. I'm in agreement with the Finance Committee that this clearly is not a CCSD function, and since I've been doing it ever since I've been here, it's one less thing. Absorbing Brian's duties is just, it's just too much, okay? So I will work with the community, staff will, the Finance Committee, and Mel was very willing, and I know Ed King's voicemail said the same exact thing, to find a way so that it doesn't disrupt maybe the services of the people who are using it and the transients or the folks who visit our area, but at the same time, just know after September 30th, we won't be paying for it, okay, because it's not in the budget. All right, and then the district rent, office rent expenditure, we won't be renewing, and we'll be vacating Suite 204 at the same time period. We need 90 days to get that out and notice everybody who is scheduled in there, mainly representative meetings, committee meetings, that they either have to find another place, or we're going to see how we can arrange our fireside lounge. We don't rent that out, so we're going to now for sure never rent it out because we will be using it as a conference room. So there will be some savings there with regard to the rent we're paying, but we need those 90 days to get organized to move that stuff that's in there. We decreased the projected increases. This was after our meeting, but keeping with the theme that the committee presented me with, which was, look, let's be tolerant and understanding of the economy today and what we're dealing with, which I'm totally supportive of. We're pretty anticipatory that, you know, this might be a year whenever we prepared this originally that we could look at the user fees. I'm not suggesting that we're not going to have to. I didn't eliminate the potential increases, but I reduced them. Okay, so the revenues that were in there maybe were a little too aggressive, not necessarily, I don't like that word, but just maybe we thought a little bit like we would be collecting too much money, so we reduced that a bit. We decreased the allocated overhead as a result of some grant funding reduction and related financial processing, and the general manager, myself, being focused in utilities as a result of knowing that I'm not going to be able to spend as much time. I can't be pulled in that direction, too, so we're winding down her services as well. We eliminated the public events, which is the concerts in the park from Parks and Rec. And then we decreased the projected revenue increases to the in-lieu and remodel fees just so that they didn't appear to be as aggressive either, because it's a lot of work to amend the user fee schedules and to do all of that, and there's just so few of us left to do it, okay? So I'm just letting you know that those were the major significant differences besides the other ones that I listed. I think those are the ones that probably hit the most, and I'm available for any questions.
Any questions of the general manager or comments from board members before we open the public hearing?
I have just one comment. I think it's amazing that in all my career that the one thing when we ask for cuts, we're always able to reduce office supplies and equipment by 40%. So my only question to the general manager is, what are you going to use for writing, and what were you going to write on?
Well, quite frankly, that's a good point.
Stone tablets.
You brought that up in your email. That's where the computers went. That's why it's such a great increase this year. Computer equipment, when we replaced it because it was old and it wasn't functioning, it came out of that line item. That's why it's so large this year. That's all. Yeah. We have office supplies and equipment, but the majority of that percentage is high just because of that.
It's a significant percentage decrease from this year's budget, but if you go back to the previous year, it's not so much. Okay, any other comments or questions? Yes, Director
One DeMeco. Question. In your discussion, the concerts in the park you said was $5,000. Is there other costs, or is that the real cost of it? I mean, was somebody else meeting some costs?
No, okay. That was the cost to provide for the bands, the sound, the insurance, and all of that stuff.
So just
typically the county waived the fees for the park, but there was work involved, so it was either a staff member or me doing it. So.
Right.
And Pros Commission, Michael Thompson did a lot of the work with some volunteers last year.
Right.
So
yes, I thought so. Okay, thank you. The other thing I just wanted to comment is that because we've been very strong, I guess, in supporting the Finance Committee, but I will, understand that the general manager and the staff have borne the brunt of working through this and knowing that it does put pressure on the remaining staff. I think it's been a good mission through this, what will be still a very trying time when the latest unemployment, I think, hit 11.5 in California.
Frank, don't you appreciate Merle and myself as well?
Mm-hmm. I said that the group. Well, I don't know if you would. I said the challenge of the board has been responded to very aptly and capably by the general manager and the staff.
Thank you.
I don't know about happy, but
ably, aptly.
Well said. Yeah. Well said. All right. With that, we will open the public hearing. I have three requests to speak. The first is from Mahala Burton.
Thank you again, directors. Firstly, I would like to thank the Finance Committee, Alan McKinnon and Merle Cliff.
There you go, Alan.
See, there you go.
You are definitely standing behind your campaign promises, and I appreciate it, and my husband does, and I'm sure the community does, because there was a revolt over fiscal responsibility, and I know that you're working as hard as you can to really trim things down, and I pray that you will get the third vote to get your policies and your complete agenda to pass everything that I respect, what you're doing. So all of the good things that have been done are all listed here. Parks and Recreation, the trolley, it's just amazing. On the pros and concerts, I understand that Connie's contract covered $600 each month to manage the pros. And she was the person that arranged the concerts. So if there, if she's no longer, if those aren't going to be done, then she should take a reduction voluntarily if you can't do it because of her contract. She's not performing those jobs, then okay. What I really want to talk about, and I probably have used up all my time now, is the remodel regulations. We are to have no intensification of water use because of our shallow aquifers. We have short-term water needs. The desal is far off in the future. Build-out reduction, that's all future conservation. But right now, where the remodels go, it's spelled out here. It can only be used for the items in here. It can't be changed unless this board votes to change it. So what I'd like to know is, where is all the money going? Every time there's a remodel, 4 guest houses in my neighborhood, 2 swimming pools in the last 5 years, new hotels that are remodels. All over town, the remodeling fees aren't going to stop. These impact fees are horrendous. Director McKinnon can tell you, he just paid a horrendous fee. If you remodel and you change from one bathroom to full, you're paying $1,650, and it goes on and on. Those fees are supposed to be paid into conservation to reduce the man on the aquifers. It's a pie of water, and every time we do a remodel, we're intensifying water use. You put in a guest house, and some of these guest houses aren't for guests, they're for full-time people. So we're violating our own ordinance by not doing this. So what I'd last like to ask in my last little question is, on the budget here for Resource Conservation Department, what is this $28,000 for professional fees? It used to be the slow Land Conservancy used to be on here, but now I see there's a professional fee for $28,000. Now what could that be for?
Madam General Manager.
Can we take all budget questions at the end, please, so I have an opportunity to meet with Al?
Thank you. Okay.
Do you have more questions?
Okay, what I'd like to, when I look at the Conservation Department, it appears that the only thing they're doing is maintaining the water wait list. It doesn't make sense. So my question is, where are all the water impact fees going? Why aren't we following the ordinance and giving rebates as incentives? And if the build-out reduction program is being paid through this sort of stealth thing called professional services, it should be removed, and that money should go back into the rebate department. Thank you.
Thank you. Let me suggest that you read the entire water conservation rebate ordinance, because if you go to the very last provision, which is section 4.20.0504, you'll see that the board has discretion to use the money for a variety of different purposes.
Yes, for conservation. Now, for no intensification of current water use.
The last sentence, or the last phrase of the last sentence, says, and any other expenditure approved by resolution of the...
Ms. Masters, I don't know if I can yet.
Well, this is
that.
A test. You know, like you get a test, Masters, you know. When you get thrown a curveball and you're not expecting it, right?
Thank you, President Sanders. I just have a couple of comments. The first one is the something that Director McKinnon mentioned, that the 25% cut in the director's pay was intended to show leadership, to have hopefully the staff take the hint and also at least forego their raises. You can add to the county and the state, the healthcare district. At their meeting on Tuesday, they determined that all of their employees they have a wage freeze at the healthcare district. They didn't take their raises, and they won't be increasing the amount of contribution to PERS. So you can add that to the list of organizations that have had at least a freeze, if not a reduction. The amount that since there was no reduction in the amount, or there was no wage freeze, perhaps the $5,700 that will be saved by not paying the directors the full amount can be spent on the $5,000 for the concerts in the park, which is an asset for this community. It's something to think about. The rest of my comments are specific to the Resource Conservation Fund Department. I second a lot of what Mihaila already said.
My first question is what does it mean that there's now a wait list fee amount of $60,000? And then the reduction in the retrofit rebate concerns me for a couple of reasons. The Phase 4 assessment of long-term water supply alternatives recommendations include increased conservation efforts to existing CCSD conservation and retrofit programs. I'm just curious to know how you determined that the rebates would only apply to toilets. Using the expenditure reports over the last several years, between March 2008 and May 2009, about $13,500 was given out in rebates, and a lot of those are for washers. If you're looking at the difference that it makes, the impact that it makes on water used, the difference, I don't know if you can get a rebate for the difference between a 1.6 gallon and a 6 gallon flush. I think people get rebates for 6 gallon toilets. That does save more. At 5 flushes a day for a week, that saves about 165 gallons per week. So it's a more comparable number. But I don't, like I said, I don't even know how long it's been since they've sold 6 gallon. And 1992 is the number that's usually given in reports that I've read on the issue. So those it concerns me that one of the things that we're supposed to be doing is conservation, and the amount of rebates, which has been an effective program, at least it seems to be having an impact. The last thing is there's a bill at Congress called the American Clean Energy and Security Act of 2009, and this might provide us with some funding. It specifically will include money for states, local governments, and other entities that already have an established voucher or rebate programs to provide existing funding to those to expand existing funding to those programs. So there may be some federal funding for the rebate program through that. I think it's a mistake to gut the program like that. Thank you for the time.
Thank you. Madam General Manager, would you like to respond, please, to the questions that were raised by the... I'm sorry. I have one more request to speak from Jerry McKinnon before we get to responses to the questions.
This is Jerry McKinnon. It is a humbling honor for me to speak to you today, June 25, 59 years after the beginning of the Korean War, in the Cambria Veterans Memorial Building. And on that subject, I would like to draw your attention to page 42 at the back of your section on facilities and resources. Point number 5, decreased projected increases in facility rent revenues for the Veterans Building. Now, if you will please turn to page 52, which is the budget page for the building. When we look at facility rents, the second line down from operating revenue, we see that it has gone up by $3,600. That the American Legion makes a donation, not rent, makes a donation of $1,000 a year toward the upkeep of this building, and specifically, if it wants to, it can go toward the utilities. We hope that $1,130 has not been transferred up to the $26,400 to make the $30,000 by the American Legion being considered as paying rent. We do not pay rent on the building. We make a donation. So I'd like to have that cleared up so that we can continue on. Now, when we look down at the allocated overhead, it's being broken into two sections, personnel costs and operating costs. And we see that there has been a jump from the estimated 2008-2009 to the 2009-2010 by 22,700 by $95,593. Now, is that what I'm... No, I got my figures mixed up. But at any rate, the allocated overhead totals $22,763, or 5% of the operating expenditures. Now, when we look at the comparison of 2007 to 2008, we see that it has gone from $52,057 to $95,593 on allocated overhead. That's a 54% increase. Are you anticipating additional legal problems so far as the facilities and resources is concerned? What inspires such a jump? So those are my two questions relative to the proposed budget. And I'd hope to get some answers, because as a community, we would really like to know where our money is going. Thank you.
You bet. Thanks, Jerry. Okay, with that, I have no more requests to speak, so I will close the public hearing and turn to the general manager and ask if she would please respond to the questions that have been posed.
Okay, thank you. The remodel fees for the first question with regard to where do they go, on page 54, the supports it. Okay, so that's flat out how it is. So we get fees in for in lieu, remodel. The wait list fees, which was another question, the $60,000, it's not being reduced. It wasn't, as you recall, from April 23rd. Previously, they weren't in there. They were in the water department, when this is the department that does the wait lists, okay? This is the one that serves or performs that function. So now it's in there, the $60,000. The assignment fees is $7,400. And that from restricted reserves is the lot merger program. Because remember, those were proceeds from sale of commercial EDUs that this board adopted a policy and said, right, if it happens, set aside the funds and use it for the voluntary lot merger program. So correct, we have those identified and brought those back in. So this department is expected to be self-sufficient, and that's where the remodel fees go. With regard to the professional services line item in this budget, it represents the Land Conservancy of San Luis Obispo working on a lot inventory and analysis, very similar to what they did for Special Projects Area 1 and 2, so we know what we have with regard to moving forward. There's not a specific identification to the build-out reduction program, because we're now branching out with them as we move forward with this project to find ways that we can actually now update our GIS. We don't have a GIS, but our GIS information, okay? So we're coordinating now with Steve Bine, as you recall, from RBF, having done this many years ago with the build-out reduction program, but we're now getting all parcel owners and all that information updated as a result of the project we're going to be working on with RBF. So they're the majority of that at about $24,000, and the remaining $4,000 is because of potential litigation or potential legal fees, because none of the budgets have ever had it. They've clearly just been coming out of admin. So it's like, for proper cost accounting, we anticipated that and put it in there. As far as their comment about following the ordinance and giving rebates, I just explained, while the rebate program is reduced to the $2,000, we're still giving it. Quite frankly, on staff, we can appreciate the fact that, you know, newer washers may be more efficient, but they also, we have differences of opinion amongst ourselves with regard to the rebate program. So we need to work that out, and that's why, just because of what we're proposing as a revenue stream coming in, the Resource Conservation Department can't afford larger than $2,000 unless the board gives us different direction. And we had some committee discussions about that, so we felt the best way is the toilets for this year, and then we'll look at how and what, and at mid-year, if the program can be enhanced. We are not eliminating it, however.
We're going to be looking at. So
exactly.
You're right on.
Oops, sorry.
Go ahead.
I apologize. With regard to the question about the facility rents and other, I'm going to be quite frank, I'm pretty sure that we're putting the American Legion money right in facilities rents, and the other is just whatever else might come in. Yeah. We don't budget other. We just let other come in. I haven't read the American Legion agreement close enough to agree or disagree, and I don't want to out of respect for Mr. McKinnon.
The allocation of the money when it comes in doesn't change the character of the contribution that's made by the American Legion. For budgeting purposes, the money has to go somewhere. So it doesn't mean that because the money goes into the rent account that it is rent. If it's a donation, it's a donation. But it has to be tracked somehow, so it's put in with rent.
As far as the allocated overhead, this is me, Al, and another staff member that I'm going to be delegating some duties to as a result of Brian's retirement.
Right. Okay, board members, any comments or questions?
Yeah, I'd like to just follow up. I mean, I appreciate the explanation. Tells me, I believe I understand what are the issues here, but right now, then, we've got $70,000 of wages and benefits to hand out $2,000. But bear with me. I understand that we're doing these other things, but it goes to the issue of should we be doing those other things? I mean, if you're only going to give out $2,000 under the idea of conservation, RBF, I guess they're the professional services.
No, they're not. And $70,000, you're not just giving out a rebate program. This is your permitting. This is all of your wait list management. This is all the transfers that are coming in, which, by the way, are picking up. That's a good sign for the community because I've been signing off on them. This is not just for somebody to administer a $2,000 rebate program. This is Corey and the whole entire permitting function.
Okay. Well, one of the key things in our open and transparent society, and I appreciate because, see, you produced last year at the beginning, one of the early packets shows what each of the departments does. And I will say two things. Words do matter, even though some people think words don't. I appreciate Jerry's point, and I don't know why we can't leave the word other and put $1,000 in and not call it rent, because they're not paying rent. Nobody should ask them to pay rent, and it's important. It obviously means
patient, right, yeah,
and wait list, which goes to permanently, but I guess you do have to do something to maintain these lists because you got a whole bunch of people on the other side who write these 20-page letters with the lists of all the waitlist people.
And they're billed annually. That just occurred, so those are collected.
Right. Yeah, well, so my point is it's not that it's the impression and the discussion that went on. I think it's got to be put that there's a lot of facility management, essentially the outside activities of development, redevelopment, waitlisting, and resource conservation. Again, you can have another issue about should we be doing more for conservation or not, but that shouldn't challenge the idea of the department and what they're doing.
It's just the title of the department.
Yeah, because I understand the issue of whether conservation, but you look at it and you say, well, there's $150,000, and what did we do? We changed some toilets. Well, no, it's the entire program, which all of it goes to managing our water, which is more of the other issue, because the wait list is an issue, the remodels, the permitting. You wouldn't know to get the fees if you're not doing the permitting. So it's a cycle of things that need to be performed.
Correct.
Yeah.
Well, as a suggestion, I mean, perhaps the general manager can come back to us with a suggestion for renaming this department that has a connotation of a more robust kind of mission than what is presently embodied in the title. Any other suggestions? Comments? Is there a motion?
No, I'd like to make some comments.
Yes, please. Director Clift.
On behalf of the Finance Committee, or myself at least, I want to say thank you to the public out there who ratified the rates in the water and wastewater. What that has done is allowed us to have the water and wastewater department on a I'll use the word profitable, but not a deficit spending situation.
Fiscally sound.
Okay, I'll use whatever term you want there. Fiscally sound basis, which is where we want it to be and where it should be, and yet we also have given it the money to do some repairs that are necessary to keep this system on. It was a tough thing to go through. and to try to come up with the numbers that make sense within doing what we're already doing. The biggest question, I think, that for this board and for this finance committee is the question you asked just a moment ago. Should we be doing that? And that was the question that was relative to things like that had been accepted by the board in the past because of having fiscal ability to do that, like the concerts in the park and the trolley, and all those things are very nice. But maybe they aren't the function of this service district. And so I think the future now holds for us to go back and look at, are we doing the things that are expected for us by this community? And hopefully that's the area we will get into. Now, there's also a big gorilla in the room. And even though this budget is set up to fund and cover the items, this is this morning's LA Times. And I want to read just one little part, just a couple of paragraphs here. It says, the governor advanced two new proposals Wednesday in lieu of an earlier plan to borrow $1.9 billion from cities and counties, and you could also add the word special districts. He would instead save $1 billion by stopping the state's contribution to its workers' health benefits and $890 million more by slashing the state's share of funding for child welfare services and foster care. Now, the budgets yesterday in the state were rejected. So it's all up to a big fight going on. And right now, 8% of our general funds are competing against the health benefits of workers and the care of child welfare services and children. So it's an emotional kind of a buy when it really gets down to the crunch comes here. It does not, right now you can kind of say where we look like we might be in the clear of not having this 8% reduction. But as this situation goes on in Sacramento, the easy grab is still grabbing these 8% of monies from tax revenues. If that's the case, we have a real problem that'll come down the line. Anyhow, I want to say that the staff worked very hard. They agreed with Director McKinnon and I on many things. They challenged us on many things. We challenged them on many things. And there were some heated discussions along the way. We hope that we are in a position now where things are in the proper budgets. And I think that was something that the general manager was talking about here, is why does 60,000 show up someplace where it was zero before? If we have the things in the proper budgets, then we can make the decisions, Director D'Amico's talking about here, is should we be doing that? And hopefully that's the area we want to kind of concentrate on the rest of the year. And I think that comes back to the original comments that Director McKinnon made about we'd like to have more open discussion at the board of some of these individual items of what we're doing. So I think I got clear feeling today that we can bring those back and we'll have it out here in open discussion. And that's really all I want to say about it, other than, again, the water and wastewater department should be fine. And that's due to the citizens of this community saying that's what we need, and that it's a reasonable position that we've taken, and I thank them for that.
May I add one
point
just to Director Cliff's statement about Proposition 1A and the potential for the state grab? There is one significant difference, and that is that it's a constitutional requirement that it be repaid. So while we may be looking at $160,000, our 8% share of our property taxes, and we all know that the state might not ever repay it, it's entirely different than the ERAF grab right now, that this district currently is out about $950,000 a year.
Right.
You know, if we didn't have that. So I just want to make sure that there is a difference. There is a constitutional requirement to pay it back within 3 years.
Point well, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Director.
That is correct, but Anybody who's ever loaned any money to anybody who went bankrupt didn't get paid.
Exactly. And point well taken on the so-called ERAF, which is an acronym, the meaning of which escapes me right now, but it, educational something, a more robust fire department. If we had that money, we would be able to meet the national fire standards in this community, which is four on an engine 24 hours a day. We can't right now because of the states having taken that money year after year after year, and now the state may take up to 8% more of the general fund money. And as Director Cliff said, you know, who's ever gotten a loan repaid out of bankruptcy? Not very many people. So we'll see what happens. But the message is clear and the point is well taken, and that is we have to be very vigilant. We have to count every penny, and we have to be prepared for the worst-case scenario, which is the state coming in and taking an additional 8% of the property tax revenue. Any other comments from board members? Is there a motion?
I move approval of Resolution 26-2009, approving the CCSD operating budget for fiscal year 2009-2010.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded to approve Resolution 26-2009, approving the operating budget for the coming fiscal year. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. With that, we'll move on to the regular business portion of the agenda. Item 9A is consideration of a letter agreement with the Cambria Community Healthcare District, which would lead to co-location of the Cambria Community Healthcare District resources at the Cambria Community Services District Fire Station. I'm going to ask the general manager for an initial report on this, and then I'm going to turn to Director Clift for his comments.
Okay. Well, you'll see the attached letter is what the committee worked on, which is currently being served by President Sanders and Director Clift. And I do understand I've signed it, Don Melendi signed it, and last a couple of nights ago at the healthcare district meeting, they approved and signed it as well. So we have it today after your approval to get it signed by the borough president. The outline is there with the five items that the committee was recommending, and there are short-term items and there are longer-term items, and we'll continue to work those out at a committee level. But this at least gets us moving toward having both agencies agree that we are going to, in fact, start doing
this at this point.
Well, this is a kind of a starting point now to where we can combine resources to the best of our use for this community. It's not a consolidation of the two departments or anything like that at this point in time, but it's a step in forward in combining the two operations together and using the resources of the people that are providing the emergency service and the people who can provide a central administration. So it's a great step forward. It's a good start. It's basically saying that this board and the Board of Trustees of the Healthcare District are agreeing to sit down and move forward in any way possible to improve services to this community across the board. And so I'm very pleased at the direction things have taken with the Healthcare District. And they've been very cooperative in the last few committee meetings and have worked very hard and, in fact, probably have pushed for a quicker resolution of this than even Director Sanders and I expected. So I'm very much in favor of this. I hope that it'll pass unanimously, and we'll get on with the ability to use all personnel, both in fire and rescue, and everybody will be better off.
Any comments or questions from board members?
I have some comments.
Yes.
I'm referring to Don Melendez's letter of June 23rd, and I see a great many action words. First, he's developing a set of ideas and initiation of the process and oversee co-location, negotiate recommendations. I see, like, is there a dire emergency of this occurring immediately for some reason we don't know?
Well, I would say in response to that, and I'm sure Director Clift has his point of view as well, I would say that that depends upon how you define dire emergency. I think for year number two is the proximity of the location on Main Street to Highway 1, or lack of proximity for a better description, requires that the paramedic equipment, the van, the EMTs, the paramedics, negotiate sometimes through heavy traffic just to get to Highway 1, which is the main artery that gets them to where most of the emergencies are. So from a response time perspective, getting those vans up to, and the personnel up to the fire station has always been perceived as being a very positive thing for the community. When Dave Melendi was the administrator of the healthcare district and before his very untimely death in a motorcycle accident, he was a very strong proponent of combining operations with the CCSD fire department. And in fact, he initiated the discussions between the healthcare district and the CCSD. We went through a period of time when there was consideration given to expanding the fire station in order to accommodate the healthcare district personnel and equipment. Ultimately, it was determined that it's really not necessary to expand the space at the fire department. There are ways to accommodate the healthcare district equipment and employees without the added expense of remodeling the firehouse. So what this is, Director McKinnon, it's a kind of a culmination of virtually years of negotiations, discussions, and kind of bringing to fruition a resolution to the problem of relocating the ambulances and the EMTs and paramedics to a much more desirable location in terms of service. Beyond the co-location, there's a whole set of issues which are kind of outlined here in the recommendations. And ultimately, in a best case scenario, we would have an arrangement whereby we'd have a kind of a unified command of all of the equipment. Fire national standards that applied to this community would require four on an engine whenever an engine rolls out. And we would have a paramedic on that engine, so we would have, instead of having as many as seven people responding to an emergency, we would be down to basically what we need, which is four. Right now, the way the system works, the way the laws are that govern the responses that we make, we can have sometimes as many as nine people show up.
I've seen that.
But only some of them are permitted, for example, to enter a burning building.
Exactly.
Even though we have paramedics standing by who are also trained as firemen. It is a really extremely inefficient kind of situation from a personnel point of view. So the hope is that we can wrench a lot of efficiencies out of the system as we go forward. And this co-location is the first step in that process.
Just as a follow-up, I'm concerned only in we're changing our charter then, and I support, I totally support what the action is. I'm concerned about the timeline. I'm concerned about things like negotiate recommendations for shared property, develop recommendations for joint powers. So from a monetary standpoint, any impact to present operations of the CCSD, and what is the timeline for maybe the next step?
All of that has to come back to the board for consideration.
Okay.
So the board will be involved in this every step of the way. And as you can see from the one timeline that we do have in here, there will be a recommendation coming back regarding co-location on or before August the 31st of this
year.
Yeah, the all this letter does is authorize us to begin to put together the idea so that they can come back to the two boards. And there's not a perception initially here of any additional financial burden to the district. In fact, there may be better service at a savings for both districts. And to your other question why it speaks.
Score, let me make one more comment, and I believe you have some comments too, Director D'Amico. There are some interesting, if not difficult, personnel issues that have to be worked out here. We're taking employees from two different organizations, two different cultures, and we're putting them into one facility. Now, to some extent, there's already cross-pollination because some of the employees who work for the healthcare district also work for the community services district. They are certified paramedics. They're also fire personnel. We need to work through those potentially difficult personnel issues. I have spoken with some of the healthcare district employees. I've spoken with our fire chief. From time to time over the years, I've spoken with the fire captains, the engineers who work for us, and so forth. I'm convinced that the employees believe that this is a good thing, that it will result in efficiencies that will enable them to better protect this community. And I think they deserve kudos for that. They really have a very broad perspective here, and they want to make this work. Having said that, the last thing I think we should do is just jam this down the throat of the existing CCSD fire personnel. I think that would be a huge mistake. They need to be involved with the chief in the process of planning how the limited space at the fire department is going to work. We want them invested in this to the maximum extent possible and not looking from the outside in when the plans are developed for moving the healthcare district personnel to the firehouse. So I would hope that the general manager will keep that in mind. And, you know, we need to consult with the fire captains, and we need to consult with the engineers, and we need to consult with the rank and file fire personnel so that they are invested in this process. And I think by doing that, we'll have a much better chance of success.
Just as an aside,
Aaron, first off, is that I was elected to the Cambria Community Services District. And I just want to pick up again on words. When Director Clift was mentioning this, he says, you know, we can get these two departments to work together. They're not. These are two separate legal entities. They have a revenue stream. We have a revenue stream. We've just spent a year and a half saying that our revenue stream is at risk. It's being overspent, and we've got to get – and we're asking people – we're asking our employees to take a freeze, if that, or if not more. Statewide, there's furloughs all over the place. And my issue is that – as I raised, I did raise it with an email to the president and to the general manager. I see the word agreement, and that starts to raise the hairs on the back of my neck because I don't know what I'm agreeing to. There's nothing here. All that's being investigated needs to be investigated, but I would not sign a merger agreement, if you will, without information there.
Right.
So several things. When we took office this past year, I know I went on a tour of the facilities. General manager did a great job with the staff, and we went around. And one of the issues, and I actually thought I was being cajoled as we went along into the fire department, because I saw hanging drapes, which we used to separate sections of the room so firemen could sleep while other people were watching TV. The gym equipment is out in the garage because they don't have any room. We do have essentially men and women are serving in these important emergency services. So you do have the privacy issues. You do have to have at least a compliance issue on making sure that everybody has their privacy. And so when I looked at it, and like I said, I actually thought he was trying to talk about maybe we need some additional space for our own firemen. Now, apparently even in this letter, it says the prospect of having to expand the existing CCSD to accommodate, and that's why the financial concerns it was suspended. I'm a little disappointed that if we're talking about something like this, that the chief wasn't here. I know we've talked about not bringing staff, but we're talking about bringing another organization in our discussion, or it puts in here, because I hear what you're saying, and I appreciate the comment that we'll be back to do that. You know, look at this as a board, but this has got to be revenue neutral to the CCSD. Any capital cost of expansion, unless they're going to dissolve and somehow get the revenues into CCSD, the CH healthcare district must commit that all capital costs, any capital cost that changes to that facility, has got to be borne by them. They are giving up their facility. Now, what they do with it and how they discharge that facility is not my concern. It shouldn't be, because I don't run that organization. So cost of use, O&M, capital costs have got to be either zero or they've got to be compensated from the healthcare district.
Can I make
one other
suggestion?
Thing? Sure. Originally, my only, and I appreciate all the background, and I wasn't listening maybe in the last 2 or 3 years as you were talking about this, but the fact is that 4 months ago, and Muriel was very forceful and righteously, that we were talking about defibrillators at $5,000. Now we're talking about moving this organization into our fold, if you will. And I went through a merger. I have to say, luckily, I came out on top. But the vice president of operations of that organization and myself fought for 2 years. And we have a chief, and he is the chief. He's got a group of people. How does that interact? This is not, and I appreciate your comment about that. It's very important. So that I don't know that, I expect that there's not going to be any precipitous action to start moving facilities up there until these five items are at least brought to the attention of the board and the public, because this is the venue for bringing that.
So
you know, I mean, those are the type of things that I'm worried about.
Sure.
But the other thing is that if you want to talk about efficiencies, if you want to get more firemen on, I would have liked, and I think I brought it up a few months ago, is we should be talking to Cal Fire. If you want to get real efficiency in our responsibility as Cambria Community Services is fire. Now, if the healthcare district is having issues on how responsive they are, where their offices are, their board should have been taken care of.
Two things. First of all, I agree with you on the revenue neutrality aspect. The one thing I would ask you to consider is adding the word net in front of that, because while there could be some expenditures on the part of the Cambria Community Services District ultimately as we work through this, there are some potential savings to the Community Services District at the same time. For example, if the healthcare district vacates its offices on Main Street, it is entirely possible that the Community Services District could utilize that office space. Mm-hmm. And so in a trade-off for free rent, for example, we might absorb some costs elsewhere. Mm-hmm. Yep. And it would be extremely desirable, I think, for us to be located on Main Street where the present healthcare district offices are, because it's much more accessible to the public. It has a decent parking lot and so forth. So those are the kinds of issues that are going to be dealt with as we go along, and nothing is going to happen without this board's approval and without the healthcare district board's concurrent approval.
I just one item there, and I appreciate that because I saw the issue, and I think sure. In your email you mentioned about the potential move. But what I want to make sure, and again for the public, as we talk about you know the financing, the budgets, and the items, is that, and I don't know if anybody here can actually tell me, unless you, maybe you can, but they have a revenue stream based on their portion of property taxes.
Correct.
If their expenses go down, who gets to decide where the savings go? Does it go to somebody in San Luis Obispo?
We have to work that out with
okay,
them.
Okay. With them or with the people? Because this is tax money distributed from the county.
With them.
With them.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's fine.
Yeah.
They keep their revenue stream even if it.
That's right. We would not want to have the healthcare district to go away because they have mm-hmm. a property tax revenue stream that I think is extremely important to make all of this work.
Well, that's all. You know, again, for the community, I'm trying to make sure we safeguard the overall
Absolutely.
Stream of money that supports the organization. Right. But right now, it was set up as two different districts,
right.
and helping them out or working, and so we all become more efficient and safeguard the health and welfare is important.
Right.
But I don't want to see it that you may misrepresenting or anything.
Right.
But the fact is, he is our chief, and
we've
given him
here.
Tremendous responsibility. So maybe at the next meeting.
Absolutely.
May I ask then of the chair to consider that. And Muriel, some reporting back on this process a little more than prior to sending us a next agreement. I found this, my neck just, the hairs on my neck went up and said, where did this come from?
Yeah.
I know you were working on it, but this is an important step.
It is an important step, and I think Merle and I both apologize for the swiftness of this, but it was largely driven by the healthcare district that,
understand.
You know, they all of a sudden wanted to do this, and so we had to hop on it. Any other questions of board members?
May I make just 3 points?
Yes, please.
I know Director McKinnon made the statement that this was a letter from Don Melendi.
Yeah.
It's a joint letter.
It's a joint letter.
From both agencies.
From both.
So you see my signature on there, too.
The chief
not being present today, well, the chief reports to me, and I'm telling you that this can work. So the chief doesn't need to be here to defend that. He is supportive, however. He hasn't been as involved in it as long as I have because I started with Dave Melendi and Bob Putney when we started working on this issue. And then the healthcare district's boundaries are also way different than ours, Frank. Another reason besides their revenue stream that we would have to maintain the separate identities of the two agencies. So.
Well, I just, since you bring that, it's a very good point because I didn't want to go, I didn't think I was going to go there, but I want to make sure that when you start integrating people who I don't know if they actually end up knowing which hat they wear, I don't want to see our fire truck outside the limits of Cambria. That's the job of Cal Fire to go outside our limits, not us. So
right.
Just so they don't, you know, everybody gets caught up. Oh, hey, you got to give me some help. Let's get a bunch of guys up there. We got to be careful of that.
Unless it's under mutual aid.
Oh, yeah, right, exactly. Oh, yeah,
we have commitments
that's
to serve
that's
outside
a
the boundaries
yeah.
of our district
okay.
under mutual
Thank
aid.
Thank you.
A final point.
Yes.
Would you hazard a endpoint? Would you hazard a guess as to where things may tangibly happen?
Merle?
Year, 6 months, next week?
Well,
I think what's here is a ladder of things.
Yeah.
Go down the road on that kind of thing. There's another interesting situation that's going on here too. Is the if you do not, we cannot go to a full consolidation. That would not work because of the boundaries and the taxation issues that are there. Besides, we don't want to expand our boundaries because it might force us into services to an area we don't want to provide. We don't want to provide water services to Harmony if they find themselves in a Los Osos situation type of thing. Let the county take care of that. So. The two entities do have to stay as individual entities. It really comes down to, as you look at these things and you test the waters on what we can do, we could go to greater extremes. But at any time, we would have the ability to back out and they would have the ability to back out and we wouldn't have destroyed our individual organizations. So probably the potential to move into moving the ambulances up to the and using maybe a four-on engine situation on the fire truck could probably be done in less than 6 months. The other ones, these other items really require a lot of understanding and work, and you're talking a year to 2 years probably to get to that point.
Thank you.
Any other questions? I have a request to speak on this item from Mary Webb.
Mary Webb, Cambria. Well, every meeting seems to have something. I'm glad a couple of you have your hair on fire because mine sure was on fire when I read this. I'd like to make sure that this is not just empire building. I mean, are we just now going to become the super CCSD that includes the fire department and the medical, the healthcare district? I've lived here for 25 years. When I first moved here, we had a volunteer fire department down there on Burton Drive. Now it's like, what, a $2 million organization with an all-new building that may need to be expanded. I'm just now starting to understand the CCSD budget. So what do we need to now have all these meetings for another like year or so just to understand the healthcare district savings? Then I don't understand why we're doing it, just so that the healthcare district can be closer to the highway or something. That just doesn't really make sense to me. When I hear someone now, I think it was Frank D'Amico talking about or Merle making sure that we're not expanding boundaries for our services, that also, yeah, let's make sure we're not expanding boundaries of the CCSD services.
You bet. Thank you. I have no more requests to speak on this item. Any more board comments, questions?
I'd just say that having served on the original committee, this has been a long time coming, and we ended up, as Merle mentioned, where we weren't getting anywhere. So I'm glad we are. There is an awful lot to consider, and I think the most important thing is that the two districts will be separate entities, whatever happens.
Yeah.
Is there a motion?
I move approval of a letter agreement outlining recommendations for co-location of Cambridge Community Healthcare District resources at fire station.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded to approve the letter agreement. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
Motion carries 4-1 with Director D'Amico voting no. The next item on the agenda, 9B, is consideration of Ordinance 01-2009, repealing and replacing CCSD Code Section 3.04.020. Madam General Manager, is there a staff report?
Thank you. Yes. On the June 15th agenda, those two resolutions for the water and sewer rates, I promised a repeal of the existing rates, which are in ordinance. And the language within Ordinance 01-2009, the paragraph, the Board of Directors of the Cambria CSD hereby adopts water and wastewater rates and amounts established by the resolution of the CCSD Board of Directors. We'll replace that since you have the resolutions on place and are in place. And so this is the introduction of this ordinance. It'll be back on your consent agenda next month for passing. And that's all I have to report.
Any questions? Any questions of the general manager? Any comments or questions from board members? I have no request to speak on this item. Is there a motion?
I'll move for the introduction of the ordinance repealing and replacing the code 3.04020.
Is there a second to the motion?
Second.
It's been moved and seconded to introduce ordinance 01-2009.
To the donation of the American Legion. I ask that the Declaration of the American Legion makes an annual donation to the CCSD for maintenance and upkeep of the Cambry Veterans Memorial Building be included in the record and minutes of this meeting. The American Legion operates as one veterans organization entitled to use the building under the California Veterans Military and Veterans Code. If we call it rent, then that's allowing the nose of the camel into the tent. Because once we call it rent, we are at the mercy of the landlord, which means it's contradictory to the California Military Veterans Code. That's why I would like to have it in the record so everybody is clear as to the relationship of any veterans organization to this building. The second point that I would like to talk about, and I'll take my cap off for this one, is the hiring of a where did he go? The hiring of the lobbyist. When I did the arithmetic on that, it turns out if I take that amount of money, multiply it by 12, divide by 317 working days per year, it works out that at 8 hours a day, 5 days a week, the wages are $29 a day. That's secretary's wages. So it's really not amount of money. And if you're looking for somebody to go to lobby for you who has the interests of Cambria at heart, I'd be very willing to work for those wages for $29 an hour. So just consider that. Thank you.
You bet. And, Jerry, your comment about the characterization of the donation from the American Legion to the district is a proper one, and the clerk will make sure it's in the minutes.
Thank you.
You bet. Okay, I have one more request to speak during the public comment period. Amanda Rice.
Knew that it was about that time of the year where it was clearing and had did not get. I don't know the person, so I'm not exactly sure what his general status is, but he was not happy with the treatment that he got by the fire department, and I did what I could to try and give him information, but I just thought I'd let you know that was a concern about how much was being cleared, and now it's just an empty, dried out lot. Second thing is, a lot of people have been asking me, well, what's going on with the CCSD and how are things going? And I said, well, everything will be hinging on next week's meeting, meaning today's meeting, and what happens. And I'm pleased to say that this meeting was very, I feel very good about what's been going on just at this meeting. The Finance Committee did a really good job. I think the co-location is really good. I continue to appreciate the two public comment periods and look forward to continuing to attend. And I mentioned earlier, two last things. I mentioned earlier that I am a member of Toastmasters. I just want to plug Toastmasters. They meet the second and fourth Mondays at Rabobank at 5:15 if you'd like to join. Just brush up on your public speaking skills, leadership skills. And the last thing is the North Coast Advisory Council, which advises the county supervisor on issues relating to county oversight, meets the third Wednesday of every month at 6:30 p.m. at Rabobank. And next month, on the agenda will be the issue of vacation rentals, because the Board of Supervisors will be reviewing that ordinance on the 21st of July. So at our meeting on the 15th, we'll be taking up that issue, and people are welcome to come down to that meeting. I appreciate the time.
Thank you.
To bring these issues.
Thank you very much. I have no more requests to speak during the public comment period. Is there anybody in the audience who did not turn in a request to speak who would like to address the board at this time? If not, we're going to adjourn to closed session. Before we do, I think our counsel has a brief statement he wants to make to expand on one item that is on the closed session agenda. Mr.
Yes,
Hirsch?
Yes, President Sanders. This is a statement of the facts and circumstances justifying the close significant exposure to litigation, and the closed session is to review this matter with the District Board of Directors.
Thank you. With that, we are adjourned to closed session.